This episode of 365 Days of Astronomy is sponsored by iTelescope.net, expanding your horizons in astronomy today, the premier on-demand telescope network at dark sky sites in Spain, New Mexico, and Siding Spring, Australia.
It's the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast, coming in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the NASA Lunar Science Institute podcast, which highlights the latest news and information of the Moon, on the Moon, and from the Moon. It's produced by the NASA Lunar Science Institute at the Ames Research Center in Moffett Field, California.
How did the moon form? Hi, this is Nancy Atkinson for the NASA Lunar Science Institute. It has long been theorized that Earth's moon was formed from a catastrophic collision about 4.5 billion years ago between the early Earth and another planet-sized body. But new research puts a different spin on that theory and provides more details of what may have been taking place both before and after the big impact. Joining me today to provide more details is Sarah Stewart from Harvard University, co-author of a new study on how the moon may have formed. Hi, Sarah, and thanks for joining me.
Hi, Nancy.
First of all, can you sort of explain the general idea of what's been called the giant impact hypothesis?
Yes, the giant impact hypothesis for the formation of the moon came about because the Earth's moon is rather large compared to the Earth when you contrast it with the smaller moons around Saturn and Jupiter. And the total spin of the Earth-Moon system is large compared to the other rocky planets in the solar system. And so in the 70s, researchers came up with the idea that another smaller planet could have hit the Earth and sprayed off a field of debris that would then make the moon and also give the Earth and the moon the spin that it has today.
Well, what are some of the problems or unanswered questions in that hypothesis?
So at the time that the hypothesis was put forth, we didn't have big enough computers to be able to model it in detail. And later on, when we could model it, it turned out that the type of impacts that could explain the mass of the moon and the total angular momentum of the Earth and moon predicted a certain composition for the moon. They predicted that the moon would mostly be made out of the object that struck the Earth. But as geochemists have been making better and better measurements of lunar rocks and comparing them to Earth, we find that the isotopes of many different elements from the moon are identical to the Earth. Isotopes are used to fingerprint different bodies in the solar system, and so we can tell different bodies apart by looking at isotopes. And everybody's different, and it's a big surprise that the moon is the same as the Earth, and it's a direct contradiction to the original giant impact hypothesis.
So tell us about your new study and how it differs from the previous theories of how the moon formed.
So we're trying to explain why the moon has this identical isotopic composition to the Earth. And when you look at the constraints on the problem, we can't change the mass of the moon and the Earth, and the only parameter that would give us leeway to look for a different solution is to consider the idea that the early Earth had a different angular momentum than today. Now, angular momentum is conserved, and so the only way to change the early spin rate of the Earth is to find a way to transfer angular momentum to some other body. And this is what we present in our work. We hypothesize that the early Earth was spinning much faster, had a day of only 2 to 3 hours, and it was struck then by another body that had could have been a range of sizes, Mars size to much smaller, and that the higher angular momentum makes it easier to launch material off of the young Earth into orbit around the Earth to then make the moon. After you make the moon gets caught in an orbital resonance with the sun that can transfer angular momentum from the moon and the Earth to the Earth and the sun. And that slows the whole system down to the present day.
Well, there was also other studies that came out last week about new models and descriptions of how the moon may have formed. Do these new studies corroborate your theory or differ from it?
A second paper came out with ours by Robin Knupp, who proposed a high spin state for the early Earth, as we suggest, but modeled it very differently. She looked at cases where the two bodies that collided to form the Earth were nearly equal mass. And when that occurs, the two bodies form, but everything is spinning so quickly that they spin off, they both spin off material. And so the disk around the Earth of the debris has the same mix of the two bodies as the newly grown Earth. This would also form a moon that has similar composition to Earth's mantle, but is done in a very different way. So we're very excited that now these two papers show that there's a wide range of giant impact scenarios that could make the moon. This makes it easier to make the moon while all the planets are growing because we have many more ways to do it now.
Do either of the studies provide more information about the potential impactor that created this whole Earth-Moon system?
Right now, the specific details about the body that struck the Earth are not well known. Planet formation simulations that grow all the terrestrial planets show that the last bodies to hit each planet come from a wide range in the solar system. So it could have been a neighboring planet that just hadn't been gobbled up by one of the final planets yet, or it could have come from the asteroid belt and been flung in and struck the Earth. We might have some clues as to its origin as we have better chemical data on the Earth and the Moon, but today it's an open question.
There was also another study that determined that huge amounts of water boiled away during the moon's birth, and this finding was made by examining moon rocks brought back to the Earth by the Apollo astronauts. Could you comment on that at all?
In order to test the idea that the moon formed by a giant impact, we would like to have predictions of what the chemistry would be like. And if the moon formed from a hot disk around the Earth, we would expect that the more volatile elements would be lost, which is what we see in the moon, and that the more refractory elements would be the same between the two bodies, which we also see. But there should be a narrow range of elements that would be sensitive to the conditions in the lunar disk. And this recent study basically acts as a thermometer to give us some information about the temperature of the disk at the time that the moon was forming and constraints on how the process of devolatilization worked as the moon formed.
Well, your study includes some interesting graphics and a video of the potential impact here, and we'll include those links to those in our show notes. But it's really interesting to look at that and just see how this all may have played out.
It's very hard to visualize. I sit in my office and I try and think, what would it look like if I could watch the moon forming impact? And it may be disappointing in that all we would see is the dust and the debris, but thinking about the different pieces of it, it's quite a dramatic event.
Right. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us. And as I said, we'll provide links for more information in our show notes.
Great.
To find out more about this topic, visit our website at www.lunarscience.nasa.gov. Any opinions expressed are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the opinion of NASA or the NASA Lunar Science Institute. This podcast is produced for educational and information purposes only. On behalf of the NASA Lunar Science Institute, thanks for listening.
You are listening to the IYA 365 Days of Astronomy podcast. Cool.
The 365 Days of Astronomy podcast is produced by Astrosphere New Media Association. Audio post-production by Preston Gibson. Bandwidth donated by Libsyn.com and Wizard Media. Web design by Clockwork Active Media Systems. You may reproduce and distribute this audio for non-commercial purposes. Please consider supporting the podcast with a few dollars or euros. Visit us on the web at 365daysofastronomy.org or email us at info@365daysofastronomy.org. Until tomorrow, goodbye.